Good morning for most of you. I'll say a few words about the transition period after retreat. One of the things that we often say that it's helpful to consider the retreat as continuing after you leave for the same amount of days you sat the retreat. So another week of retreat for you. We sometimes don't even realize how affected we are. I've learned for myself that the effects of a retreat get integrated over time. It's not necessarily so linear. This is what happened, and this is what, you know, what's different. Sometimes I've noticed the effects months later. You know, I just realized, you know, wow, I'm just a little bit happier in my life. I'm a little bit kinder in my life. One of the things that I often like to do after retreat is to reflect on my priorities in life. What's important? What's our deepest inspirations? Though it's good to not, you know, it's really, I think, important not to make major life decisions during that week. I know a lot of people sometimes get so enthused and, you know, they start changing their whole lives, you know. I'm going to go be a monk now, you know, and let it sit for a week, you know, if those kind of ideas and feelings come up. You know, it's just better to allow things to settle and integrate more. Some of you have more luxury of time than others when you go home. You know, if you can, it can be helpful to have a little more quiet time than usual in your daily life. You know, maybe do more sitting, take long walks, and have some unstructured time. Try not to structure all your time where you're always doing something. Allow yourself to have just time to stare out the window, you know, look at the birds, listen to the birds. But probably these days, it's what's most important for many people is to limit how much time we spend on our devices when we come back from retreat. And there's an analogy that I found interesting. You know, thoughts can be like germs, just like germs. You know, we get cold germs through our nose, but we get thought germs from the words we read, and the images and videos we see. And you know what? Both cold germs and thought germs reproduce. And they get bigger and bigger, more and more. And that one way of looking at social media, for instance, is like exposing ourselves to everyone's mental sneezes. So, you know, maybe keep that in mind. You know, some of the things we do with our devices, you know, are really beautiful. You know, they're an expression of our care for the people in our lives. You know, we call our friends, our family, people we care about. We email, you know, and we can do with just a lot of wonderful intentions and love. But what you might consider is limiting it to 15 minutes at a time. You know, at least email 15, 20 minutes, you know, and maybe go back a few hours later if you want to do more. But I know I've been, like, after a retreat, you know, by my 50th email, you know, my mind's gone dark, contracted, and maybe even getting a headache sometimes. You know, so really allow this spaciousness that we've developed, cultivated, to really have a chance to continue to grow. You know, when you make phone calls, you know, don't do them all in one day. You know, it's okay if they don't hear from you the moment you get off retreat. You know, give yourself a little bit of time to gradually. And, you know, I like to, one of the things I find helpful is considering doing email as a vehicle for loving kindness. Allow it to be a vehicle with friendliness to whoever we email. And one last thing I want to say, well, a couple of things, you know, about talking about the retreat. You know, sometimes we have a lot of enthusiasm and people say, how was the retreat? And they want you to say, it was great. That's it. That's all they want from you. You know, and we start telling them all sorts of details and they have no context for it. So consider only sharing more details with people who are really, truly interested. After, you know, so many days with silence, sometimes there's a tendency to want to talk, to outflow, which is fine, but sometimes the impulse might have more momentum than is helpful. And I know for myself, I find myself talking way too much at times, you know, and kind of exhausting myself. So again, be kind of aware of that tendency, if that's what happens with you. You know, maybe spend more time listening to the people in your life and asking about them and allowing yourself to spend a little more time being more receptive. It's really easy sometimes to get swept up in the momentum of conversation. So really stay mindful of that. And, you know, those of you who are returning to lots of busyness, you know, I know some of you have... you have gone from this week of silence into major life changes, you know, and I appreciate that. And it can help to really consciously keep returning to the body connection, keeping the body relaxed as we move through the day. If that's the only version of mindfulness we do, that's plenty. Just be to keep the body at ease and relax. It just takes one moment, one breath, to show up, to return here, this moment. So I'll let Matthew continue now with more daily life things. Thank you.
Thanks, Inez. Just 15 minutes of email, that's all you're giving me? At least 30, come on. Okay, I'll do what you say. So this path is all about intrinsic motivation. We can kind of coast on extrinsic motivation for some time, but that doesn't last. And it's all about what flowers in one's own heart, what is kind of reinforcing, it is self-reinforcing, not about something, not about some separable outcome, not about what some supposed authority figure says, teacher says. It's like, what is native to my heart? And the weird thing about teaching is we are this kind of extrinsic motivator or something like that. But all we're doing is kind of just... connecting some dots, you know, maybe allowing you to see your own heart more clearly, or allowing you to remember what is really meaningful to you. And from that kind of intrinsic motivation, all the goodness unfolds, you know. And it's not to say we can't use external forms, like Shinzen Young would say sometimes, like it's better to be clever than disciplined, you know? Like sometimes we have to get clever how we structure our sitting practice, how we structure some Sangha engagement, how we stay motivated. But in the end, like, the practice doesn't go unless we find something that is intrinsically motivating about it. And for what it's worth, my experience is that you sort of have to find what you're genuinely curious about. Like, curiosity is maybe the most trustworthy intrinsic motivation, in my experience. And a friend of mine said, if you want to understand your conditioning, you will. And if you don't, you won't. And we have to be honest. Do I want to? It seems like the answer, of course, has to be yes, I want to. But do we? Do we want to? And it takes a certain kind of, a certain kind of confidence that, a certain self-acceptance, confidence that whatever we find about our conditioning, it will never be a reason, a cause or condition to love ourselves less. That's just not how it works. We don't find reasons to love ourselves less. We find our pain and confusion. But if anything, that's a reason to love ourselves more. And so we're just animated by this kind of like, what is running me, you know? How am I impacting other beings? What's the space between my self-conception and the conception that others have of me? How can I interrogate that? So we just, where there is curiosity, we follow that thread. And that's a very it's a very open way of practicing, because it's not specifying an outcome. It's really got no real agenda in a certain way. It's just like, I want to see. And that's a powerful intention. And that hooks into, that leads us into all the other facets of Dhamma. Not always possible to be mindful. We have to let go of the retreat form. Your mind is it's not your own. It's like the arising of many conditions, this retreat being one of those conditions. And so it's not realistic to try to hold on to the mind that is fading, you know, away as the conditions change. So we have to be graceful with that. You know, we have to be graceful with that. There are certain things we do have to let go of, but not everything. Not everything do we have to let go of. And so some of the, you know, yeah, the intentions that Inez alluded to, things alive in your heart. We can nurture those. And over time, it's, you know, I said in some group, it was like, this is not a state-based practice, it's a trait-based practice. Yeah, meaning that we do this formal practice of mindfulness to know moments of mindfulness, and those moments at some point over time harden into the trait of mindfulness, which means we're more mindful when we're not trying to be mindful. We're more kind when we're not trying to be kind. That happens. That really does happen. And yeah. And so my experience is that there's less, it's less about mindfulness. We often emphasize choice, choosing the response rather than the reaction. My experience is it's less like I make the right choice and more like my options are much better. Or there's no choice at all. It's just, we've developed good habits. Yeah. We can't always be mindful. You know, mindfulness is, I don't know what it would be like to be like exquisitely mindful doing one's taxes or something like that, or certain kinds of things, a lot of things like that, where you have to engage in a certain way. And, I think it's important to, okay, this doesn't feel like a moment for like metacognitive awareness, but maybe we want to be running something wholesome. It may not be mindfulness, but it might be focus, you know, it might be some steadiness, non-distractedness. It might be bodily relaxation, just coming back again and again, just shoulders down. You know, when I do yogi jobs, like when I'm a retreatant, do work, you know, do the pots or whatever, I just like keep coming back to just like letting my shoulders down, you know, just a little ease. And so we have some thread of connection to Dharma. You know, some thread of connection to Dharma, even if it's not exactly mindfulness. Over time, more and more of the world reminds us of the path. Just like, oh yeah, there are the four truths. There's love, there's change, there's clinging. Now, what I'm about to say is completely, maybe, I don't know, contradictory to everything that I've just said, but you have to sit every day. Do you understand me? Every day. No. It's good to sit. It's good to sit. Just body to the seat, you know, just butt to the cushion, even for just a few breaths, just to keep the thread. And